Welcome to The Borough,
a podcast where we discuss our favourite books and have a bit of a laugh. Hi, I'm Chloe.
And I'm Megan. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm from Canada.
So you, she, her pronouns, and I'm from England. So today is a bit of a different episode from what we usually do. We want to kind of start these one-off episodes where we talk to people from like different parts of the creative industry and see how they've got into it and kind of their experience with what they've done. So today we're very excited to announce our first guest, which is Rob Rokicky, who is the composer and lyricist of the nominated musical The Lightning Thief, Percy Jackson musical. And he's also composed the music to lots of other exciting projects, such as Monster Songs and most recently Punk Rock Girl.
Thanks for joining us today. How are you doing today?
I'm good. just to set the record straight, I didn't compose the lyrics to Punk Rock Girl. That's a jukebox musical, but that I put together with my friend Joe Iconis. Yeah. But I arranged the songs to jukebox musical with Joe and orchestrated it. But yes, composer of a lot of other random projects. thank you so much for having me. I use he, him pronouns. What would you like to know?
We kind of wanted to start off kind of like some icebreakers to get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So what's your first question, Megan?
Okay. So we're both like really big, like musical theater nerds, like just like you. What is like one musical or play that you've been wanting to see, but you haven't yet?
Musical or play I wanted to see. Well, I had tickets to POTUS, and then my newborn daughter came early, and that was also the weekend I was supposed to see Suffs, which I really wanted to see, Shane Taub's piece. So those were the two pieces I was really excited about seeing, and I hope I'll get to see them in some iteration in the future. I had a lot of friends in Suffs, and I think the cast was amazing, so I hope that will happen. I want to take my nephew, is 10, so I want to take him to a bunch of shows. So, is he 10? No, he's going to be 8. Oh my God, this is what having a newborn baby does to you. Time means nothing. He's 8, but I want to take him to see Little Shop of Horrors because that's one of my favorite musicals of all time. He needs to see it because he likes things spooky and scary. And,
and just like Chloe. Chloe loves horror.
Definitely.
Well, I'm born on Halloween. My favorite musical is Sweeney Todd, so there you go.
Oh wow, I love that. So what's something on your bucket list that you haven't managed to get to yet, like the one thing you'd really like to do?
I mean, there's a million things I'd like to do. I mean, in theater or in general, I mean, every new experience I have, every project I have, it opens some new collaboration and things like that that I wasn't ever expecting before. So I'm excited for the unknown and for new projects to come my way. I really want to work in multimedia finding more accessible ways of doing musical storytelling that doesn't have to revolve around necessarily a traditional proscenium space. So I'm looking at a lot of immersive theater, and I'm looking at a lot of streaming options. I have a show that's in development as a virtual reality video game. So, like, I don't know. Making art, that's all I care about doing. So I don't have anything. I mean, I've been very fortunate to have had a show go to Broadway, but that's not a goal that I really want to have again. that thing just kind of happened that way. Yeah. I care more about just telling good stories and finding projects that are exciting to me and collaborators that are exciting.
If you could like compose music for anyone in particular, who would you compose music for?
You mean like for a singer?
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question. Monster Songs was kind of a dream project because I just asked people that I loved and I wasn't sure if they would say yes. So I had some of those bucket list things checked off. I got to have Cheryl Freeman, who is the original Acid Queen, and Tommy sing on that, or Jelani Aladdin, or Megan Hilty, whose husband is an old friend of mine. So, like, I wanted to work with her, who is just one of the most gracious, lovely human beings. I keep wanting to do something with Eden Espinoza. I adore Eden as a person and as a performer. I adore her voice. So I'm trying to, like, that would be fun. I'm working on a project with, well, my favorite voice is Sarah Beth Pfeiffer's, and I'm one of my best friends. So I'm writing for her voice, kind of. I think about that all the time, kind of her voice in my ear on a particular project I'm working on right now. Yeah, she can kind of do anything. So I'm very spoiled that I have voices like that. Oh, I'm also really intrigued about working with voices in the pop world of folks that do crossover things. Voices like Grace McLean or voices like Molly Hager, I think, are really exciting to write for. They have really interesting takes on everything from intonation to riffs to phrasing. Their acting is incredible. So I gravitate towards those kinds of singers, ones that have a real point of view with their voice, that don't sound kind of too slick and polished and quote unquote musical theater. I'm a little bit more interested in interesting, weird, or just specific and authentic voices.
Cool. So my next one is, if you could meet or have a chat with any fictional character, who would you like to meet with?
Fictional character. Oh, this is, oh my God. Oh my God. This is really, you put me right on the spot on this one. I mean, like, obviously I would say Percy Jackson, guessing it would be really fun, but I don't know. I read a lot of, like, Victorian literature. I was a Victorian literature major in college in musical theater, because, you know, why not? the things that really pay the bills. So I'm trying to think of, like, is there characters in, like, Middlemarch or something, or in, like, gothic horror I would want to meet. I don't know if I would want to meet Dr. Hyde, Jekyll. Let's see. That's so hard. Pass.
To be honest, I think I'd be able to.
I would say we can say Percy Jackson for now. That's fine. That's fair enough. That's a loaded question. That's easy. Low hanging fruit. That's easy. I want something more literate, but that's fine for now.
My next question is kind of relating to the last one. Yeah. Is there any character from, like, your previous shows that you related to the most?
Well, I think, like, every show I work on, I put an element of myself into, and you have to, like, kind of get in the characters' heads. I think just life situations as they were, I had a really tough, hard year. A bunch of things kind of happened that were really hard. And so when I was feeling very angsty and very angry. And so I was able to channel those things through the character of Percy, but also Annabeth, who's my favorite character to write for, of that. But I think, like, every one of my characters I've written, I try to put myself in their shoes. You know, I try not to judge them, but there's an element of me in every person or animal or monster that I'm trying to write for.
Nice.
So the last question we have from these little icebreakers is, what is something that someone has said to you, or maybe a quote from something that's really stuck with you?
There's a couple of things. There's one that I read that Adam Gettle wrote, and I'm going to totally paraphrase it terribly, which was, like, don't let relevant get in the way of good. It was something around those lines of, like, if you're trying to write something that is, like, super topical, like, it's just, don't try to let that get in the way of just telling a good story. That was an interesting one. It's like bits and pieces of things. Mm-hmm. Another was from a a music director named Jim Abbott, who was like, use the whole keyboard. And my mind was kind of blown because I was very young at the time, and I was writing something kind of the middle. But also, and to just steal, find stuff that you love and then take it through your lens and it will turn into something new. Mm-hmm. Like there is that old adage, great writers steal. But my favorite piece of advice ever, I wrote a song about actually, and that was a card I found on a floor in a practice studio that a mother had written to their kid, and it was left on this floor, and it's this kind of bolstering, trying to cheer up their kid, and it stuck with me. It's a really beautiful letter, but it's just about kind of perseverance, that kind of stuff. But if you ever want to listen to it, the song is called Hi Honey. And I basically took verbatim that letter and I just set it to music. It's only like a minute long. It's very short, but all the advice that I could possibly think of is in that. She was a very smart mom, whoever she was.
You're like really quite well known in like the theater industry, especially from like the Lightning Thief musical that you just did. Uh-huh. But we wanted to go back into like some of your previous projects and talk about them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you, I'm, it's funny cause I've been working on my website. I have a finally updating my website and, just looking back at the last 15 years of projects, cause I was an actor primarily when I first moved to New York after the University of Michigan. And then, but I was always writing musicals that whole time, but then I kind of switched over kind of full time into writing musicals around 2010. But yeah, I have a ton of different projects that kind of span a lot of different styles and genres. And I've worked with different collaborators on almost every one of them, which I enjoy. I actually like working with a bunch of different people. Kind of my modus operandi after after the pandemic started was, and after finishing Lightning Thief was every new project, I want to work with someone who doesn't share either my age, gender, or ethnicity or race. And it's been really fruitful to like work with folks who don't have the same worldview of me. And then, to find projects that we are passionate about. It always, you know, breeds new discovery and stuff like that. So I worked on a show called Breathe with Rebecca Murillo, who's a writer I really love. That was a streaming musical and we made an album of that, with the phenomenal Danae Benton. Oh my God, she's amazing. Speaking of voices I like to write for, I hadn't written for a soprano in forever and she's just a glorious soprano. Working on a piece called, are you talking about like previous to Lightning Thief or stuff I'm working on now?
Previous to Lightning Thief.
Like yeah. early stuff. Okay, yeah. Early stuff. Well, the first musical I wrote in high school into college was a show called Trespasses, which was terrible. And that was a adaptation of the Greek play, The Oresteia. And it was like a really intense musical. But we performed it at my school. It gave me the confidence to like do a production of my work. I did a demo of it and put it together, and I was lucky enough to have Stephen Schwartz listen to it because I happened to be an actor doing a piece that he came to see, and he was like, "Oh, so you're the writer in the cast?" And he's a real advocate for helping writers, and he listened to my music, and that was a wonderful mentor moment. And then later, I got to thank him because he came to see The Lightning Thief. So I got to thank him personally on stage many years later. Plus my wife did Wicked. So anyway, what was I going to say? What else? Oh, I wrote a piece after that was called, when I moved to New York first, it was a show called Martha and Me, which was this kind of, with a woman named Sunny Turner. And that was kind of this dark satire about perfectionism. It was right when Martha Stewart was about to go to prison. I don't know if you were too young to know this, but famous figure, Martha Stewart, cookbook author and guru and TV show host, was brought up on charges of insider trading, but basically it was kind of a musical exploring this like woman's Thanksgiving dinner that all goes to hell because she's trying to make it so perfect and how that is just impossible. And then kind of how this family implodes. So it was this kind of dark satire. And that really was where I learned to like how to like write for a star. I wrote for this woman, Jennifer Allen, who is Faith Prince's cover for a billion shows. She's done like 30 Broadway musicals. So writing for someone who had like someone who just had gravitas to them. I learned how to write. I learned how to arrange. That was like a really great moment for me. That was in the play, the Fringe Festival, way back when. And then I wrote a piece that then I continued in the BMI workshop called Samson's Fire, which was about the true story of this guy, Augusta Sipori, who on the island of Martinique was the sole survivor of Mount Pele's earthquake. It killed like 40,000 people except for him. And it's this like story of survival. And I said it during kind of like a conceit being also set at Hurricane Katrina in 2005. So these like conflicting stories of fire and flood and things like that. That was really fun learning kind of about the history of Martinique. And it's very sad colonization, like so many other things. But that was a fun project that I worked on for a bit. I worked on a piece called Love New York for a while that we were supposed to have a production of, and then the economy tanked. So that was very sad because that kind of fell apart. But that piece was kind of my like, I think every writer has like a New York piece, and that is a show that is very much that. It's like 20 somethings figuring out their stuff in New York. And I wrote that with a guy named Michael Ruby, who I love very much. And he and I collaborated. He was my longest collaborator. We worked on a couple different projects together. Another one was a show called Relativity that then we turned into a piece called 1111, which is about a brother and sister, fraternal twins that it's like it goes out of order. And it's all about kind of identity and kind of taking agency in your life. And I find sibling relationships fascinating, and I'm a twin. And the show is told out of order. And that was where I really started to find my voice as a writer, of like figuring out what my kind of sound is, and the kind of pop rock stuff I wanted to write. The character of Regan is one of my favorite characters to write for. And Sarah Beth is like, loves that character. She came on board. Sarah Beth Pfeiffer, who is this actress that I had met doing the Lightning Thief, like way, way back when it was like just a workshop. She helped us dramaturg this piece called Relativity, and then turned into 1111. And she does that character justice. I love, 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 love writing for that character. There's that. The last thing, I have so many projects, so I'll just tell you what was the last one after that. Oh, Strange Tales. So Strange Tales is my favorite show I've ever written. It also was supposed to have a production, and then producers bailed on us at the last second after holding the option for a year. So it kind of killed all the momentum of the show, and it kind of broke my writing partner's heart, and he left writing musicals and went to LA to go into advertising. So like Tick Tick Boom is real, y'all. It's like literally happens all the time when your friend leaves, your writing partner leaves and goes into advertising. Strange Tales was a piece about three strange but true animal stories, or stories of animal heroism, and kind of how we need animals as much as they need us. It's a really wonderful piece. It's truly my favorite thing I've ever written. And I hope one day to get back to it. It means a lot to me. And we had that in a couple festivals. It won a bunch of awards. It got to play Ars Nova, part of this thing called Ant Fest. And then, it just kind of, like this industry happens, unfortunately, a lot of times the rug can kind of get pulled out from underneath you in a piece that you've worked on for many years. And then it kind of sometimes can kill a show or kill the momentum of a show. And you have to kind of work right on to the next piece. But hopefully maybe some of these old projects will have a new life. That's something I'm thinking about as I also are looking for new projects. Sorry, that was the longest answer ever.
No, okay.
Really interesting. I've been writing musicals for a very long time, so I probably have about 15 to 20 musical projects. I worked on movie musicals. I've worked on a bunch of stuff.
Wow.
Well, really impressive.
I don't know if it's impressive. I've just hustled a lot and said yes to a lot of things. Not all of these things paid very well.
Yeah.
Or at all, for that matter, for some of them. So,
speaking a bit about kind of your previous projects you've worked on, a lot of them I've realized have been kind of like pop rock genre sort of projects. I was just wondering if there's like a specific reason, if you find that you could tell stories better in that way.
You know, it's interesting. I grew up only listening to classical music. My parents only listened to classical music. I discovered like rock like late, like middle school maybe. But so I do have a real affinity for orchestral pieces and for things like that. And I think that's maybe how my kind of love for orchestration got started. But I think there is such a craft to pop music that is so underappreciated. And I said Sweeney Todd is probably my favorite musical. My second favorite musical is Tommy. So, and then like the hybrid of the two are pieces I was just Little Shop of Horrors and things like that, that are able to take genre and pop rock and mix them together. I think genre is really exciting to write in the theater. But the vehicle of a pop song or a rock song, the like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, just the way that's structured is just such a perfect vehicle for plot to get story told across in a really elegant way, rather than the kind of ABAB can be a little bit clunky. And just in terms of song structure. So I found it useful, especially in like Montauk sequences and stuff like that. And in the pieces I've written to use pop rock music, I gravitate toward pop rock music. I don't listen to that many musicals. I listen to a lot of different rock bands. I'm interested in finding that authenticity of sound of that genre. So for example, I'm working on a piece called Experience Marianas about an oceanic cult. And it really wants to sound kind of synth pop, and to make, how do I make that sound authentic? So I had to research that music. And then I'm working right now with a producer who co-wrote on some of Sarah Bareilles' songs, and to kind of get someone from the real production world of that world. It's so different, the pop world, the pop rock, than musical theater in terms of production, in terms of engineering, in terms of mixing, all of those things. And I'm trying to create like sonically what to bring some of that authenticity back into the theater. Because I feel like a lot of it tends to be watered down. When you try to get to pop rock musicals, I feel like that's such a kind of generic nomenclature. Anything that has drums and electric guitar can be called pop rock. Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at with that. I think it's a good vehicle to tell stories, and I think it goes with my voice of just like how my point of view on things tends to come out in that in genres like rock or folk rock, but usually some version of rock.
Hey,
I do want to write an Appalachian musical. I was in a country band for a while, so I really would love to write like a bluegrassy kind of thing or something like that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, actually.
That's a bucket list thing.
Hey, also, you're talking about how you've done like so many projects, like 15 or 20. Was there like one in particular that you're like really proud of?
I'm proud of all of them, I think. I mean, because you work on them for so many years. Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, obviously I'm proud of The Lightning Thief because it, not only what it was able to do for me, but really for what it was able to do for my friends, the cast that had been with that show for so long, my co-writer, everything, you know, all of that stuff. That was great. So I'm just very proud of that. But I was proud of that show way before Broadway. I was more proud of what that show did for my friends and the confidence it gave me. I think Monster Songs I'm really proud of because uh, it it was the one of the first projects that was like only solely me in terms of the music. I still had a collaborator. It was an amazing graphic illustrator because we made this a comic book thing together. But to know I could stand on my own and write a story, that was, I was very proud of that. But again, my favorite show I wrote, Strange Tales. I'm the most proud of Strange Tales. One day someone will see that show.
So me and Megan are both pretty creative people, I would say.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not sure with America, but with our education system, like creative careers aren't really encouraged that much. So I was kind of wondering, was there like, you had to like create like a backup plan, or was kind of writing or acting your go-to that you were going to eventually get to?
Well, I never knew that it was a viable career path. I just loved doing it since I was very little. And I was just like, oh, I just do this. And my parents were very encouraging. Most of my friends, I don't know, you have IB, the International Baccalaureate Program. Most of my friends, we did the IB program in high school. They all went into engineering. Or became lawyers, a lot of engineers, doctors. And I was like, I do this. This is what I do. So I definitely had the support of my parents to continue it, but I never kind of thought seriously that I could do something else. I loved it so much. I went to a camp one summer called Interlaken, and that like solidified in my brain, oh, people can do this at this level, that young people are capable of this. And seeing people training professionally to go into it as a career path, I thought, oh, I see that as something exciting. So that's when I started to apply for schools. But it's discouraging that you feel that way. I feel like job in the creative, you know, in some capacity is, you know, in terms of education in particular, is only helpful to you. Because you can be so useful in so many other fields, in communication fields, problem solving, all those kinds of skills you get from being in theater. It's such a wonderfully collaborative art form. So I'm sorry about that. No, and also a lot of it is you have to create your own opportunity for yourself, unfortunately, in some regards. I think if I had stayed in Colorado where I grew up, there wouldn't have been as many opportunities for me. So I was very lucky and privileged and able to like try to find a home in New York and figure, you know, like make my way as an actor for many, many years and then continue writing. But I mean, just had to stick with it for very, 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 very long time. So you gotta love it. Where exactly are you? So in Canada, where are you, Megan?
I'm from Manitoba.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So there really isn't much here.
And Chloe, you're...
I'm from London.
Yeah, in London proper.
There's
you're all over.
Yeah, I'm back home for summer now, but I was at uni near kind of the Wales area. So I was very far away for university.
Well, what are your creative outlets? Are you interested in writing, directing, acting, producing?
So first I've kind of like done acting classes and dance classes like most of my life. And I've also recently kind of got into script writing for the stage.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah, I do. I can't act for life of me. I have too much stage fright. But I've like gotten like a really big interest in like the like technical part of like plays and musicals and events.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot in high school. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Technical theater is so important.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I got a tour of the like concert hall in my city of like all the technical stuff, and it was so cool.
Yeah. It blows my mind.
Yeah.
Folks keep the show running with all of that.
Yeah, theater.
Exactly. It's so much.
But yeah. Anyway, what else you got?
Oh, yeah. If you had the chance right now to create like an original musical, what themes would you like love to explore?
I like to write about things that scare me. It helps me process them. So Monster Songs is about how we other people and we don't see them for who they are. And so this little boy kind of does that. Working on a piece about cults and tribal think, you know, this experience Mariana. So that scares me a lot. And that the idea of the show is that it indoctrinates the audience. So you get to be a part of the cult too. Those are the kinds of things I'm looking at. I just started working on a piece that we made into a movie musical that now we're hopefully going to put back into a stage piece with a wonderful writer, Australian writer named Anna K. Jacobs, called The Real Gemma Jordan. And it's about identity and hiding behind. This is about an Instagram influencer who has her identity stolen by this troll. So she goes on like an adventure to find her, a la kind of like Catfish. And the show explored things that, again, like isolation, how we hide behind our phones, how sometimes the online presence we have can feel more real than real life. Mm-hmm. And so those things excite me of finding theatrical ways of bringing those ideas to life. I'm not like a morbid, well, maybe I'm a little bit of a fatalist, but I do like writing about things that scare me. So I'm looking actively for projects that have like kind of supernatural elements to them or heightened elements to them or things that are something is off in some way, but it's like a lot of social things. I mean, Sarah Beth and I have a lot of conversations because she's the co-writer on the book of Experience Marianas about kind of cycles. How do we break them? Looking at patriarchy in different ways and just like, you know, a groupthink and tribalism and those kinds of things. But like, how do you make that like entertaining and fun too in a theater piece? And I'm also working on some silly stuff. That's the other thing. I have these like projects that are like dark and stormy, but I'm also like looking at other ideas that are just silly and fun because that's good too.
Cool.
So I know we talked a bit about your project 1111 earlier. Uh-huh. And I looked a bit into it and I kind of liked how it had that kind of Tarantino feel with the structure, how it was out of place and not all like linear. I was just wondering in general, when you're working on your projects, are there certain like, for example, films or directors or people who kind of inspire your choices or influence what you're doing?
I would say so. I think it has to do with the piece, you know, obviously like form dictates function or maybe sometimes vice versa or like however your story is being told, what is the genre of it? And then that sometimes will help dictate how that story is unfolds either on stage or on filming. Sometimes the media of how you're setting it or using it. Sorry, looking at my timing at the door. Could you repeat the question one more time?
Yeah, that's okay. Just wondering if there's any like certain creative like medias or like certain people that inspire the way that you write your projects or the way that you kind of go about like the process of making them, I'd say.
Oh, right. So it again, like it depends on like the piece. If it's, for example, like this Ocean Cult show, right? I'm listening, the pop music that I'm listening to is somewhat inspiring it. I'm listening to music from the 80s of like synths and a lot of sounds of expression music that is like, we call ambient textured music, that kind of stuff to create those sounds and looking at wavelength forms, but then also sound effects of like what that feels like with like ASMR and things like that with kind of the sound design of what you might do in this cult situation. Then like, where would that be set? If it was on a ship, what would that look like? What kind of a venue would we try to put that kind of a piece in? What would the audience situation be seated in? How would all of those elements come together? Would we have some songs on tracks that then the audience could like dance to? Because it's this like with the fun kind of anthemic cult number. So I think, like, does that answer your question a little bit? Of like, definitely. I think about like the whole thing together a bit, and then, okay, how can I make it sound more right for this? And so I'll go listen to a bunch of stuff, or I'll take classes, or I went to learn all about immersive theater out in this place out in Brooklyn. It's kind of like, what elements of that could we possibly use in this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Piece,
stuff like that. So that's how I kind of get ideas. Like,
cool.
Yeah. I don't know why Monster Songs decided to be a comic book, but that was just the way it needed to happen. I wanted a comic book you could listen to, and I found an illustrator. So that was an interesting collaboration that I had never worked like that before with someone who is just all visual. But now setting that in a theater, I have to figure out, okay, how do we get away from the art and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. We also want to do a little discussion about like your career and like acting and how it developed.
My question. My acting career? Sure. Well, I started acting in elementary school and then all through high school. Then I went to this Interlochen Arts Camp where I realized I could do this professionally. I went to the University of Michigan as a musical theater major and an English major. And then moved to New York in 2001. It was actually two weeks before September 11th. And actually my first job was at a real estate place across from Tower One. It was a real interesting time to be in New York as an actor. But I did, in college, I had my first kind of taste of professional theater. I worked at the Music Theater of Wichita my cat is howling. Come on, Doogie, get out of here. I worked at the university, I worked at West Virginia Music Theater. I worked at a theater called North Shore Music Theater in Beverly, Massachusetts. And that's who gave me my equity card. So then I did a bunch of off-Broadway shows. I did a lot of other regional theater. And then I booked two national tours. Booked the tour of Evita that Hal Prince directed. So that was like a dream come true, getting to be directed by Hal Prince. And then I also did a Miss Saigon and a tour of that. And actually with a bunch of like young guys from Carnegie Mellon, one of whom was Corey. What's his face? Corey, who was in Newsies and a bunch of other Broadway shows. Who's in Bandstand too. It's wonderful. I did a lot of regional theater. I worked at West Virginia Public Theater. The Evita tour did go up to Canada. So I did get to go up to like Kitchener and Toronto and a bunch of places. I worked on a cruise ship for a year. That went all over the world. And that was pretty cool. As an actor, singer, dancer, musician. All the while writing. And then I booked a Broadway show as an actor. It was a show called Pump Boys and Dinettes that a director named John Doyle was going to do. And then the producers pulled out at the last second. We found out on a Friday that our rehearsal was postponed after 6 months of me learning accordion. I was understudying two leads, and it was going to change my life, the kind of money I would make and all of that kind of stuff. And it just fell apart. And so that was like in 2011, 2012. And I was in a really bad place. I just, the joy of kind of, I got the thing. I booked the thing. And then it kind of was taken away from me. I was so kind of lost. I didn't know what to do. And that's when, I think it was within a couple of weeks, my friend Joe Iconis said, hey, there's this musical about, Greek myths. They're looking for writers. You should submit. And then I started focusing on Lightning Thief, and that took the next kind of, and a bunch of other projects during that time. That week that I also lost my Broadway show was the week that Strange Tales lost its regional theater production and its producer. So it was a really rough time. Like, I didn't know what to do. So I finally did a concert with a bunch of friends, and then I kind of got back on the track and I said, okay, I'm going to finish this Monster Songs album so that something exists and physically exists, because I have done all this work and I have kind of nothing to show for it in some way. So that's when I really started like trying to get music on some kind of device, you know, my songs out there. And then Lightning Thief kind of changed my life from there on. And that's kind of how I went more into the writing full time. I would love to do a play. I would love to do a musical, but
yeah,
I miss it. I do, but I don't miss the grind of it. It's waking up at 5 a.m. to get online outside of a theater so I could get seen. It's a little more streamlined now. You can sign up online and you can wait and then you can go, but it's an exhausting thing.
Very stressful, yeah.
A similar thing happened here in the West End with Andrew Lloyd Webber's new show, Cinderella, where there was supposed to be a new cast coming in, and they found out over social media that the whole show has just been cancelled.
I read about that, and way that was handled, I thought was rather bad. But also, you know, these things happen, and you know, and I have to remind myself of that too. You know, it's the industry is sometimes just held together by like duct tape and staples. You know, like how things happen, it's so arbitrary. The universe has to be just like in the right order of everything for you to get that job, for the audition to go well, or for a show to get picked up and find a theater, even if it's available. Like any job that you get or is a small miracle, and definitely any show that gets made and let alone produced is a small miracle, truly.
Yeah,
it is a tough thing. But that again is why like I think generating so much content with your friends and finding a sense of community of artists mm-hmm. that you love to work with is so important to keep you afloat during those tough times, because I needed to also take a break from acting. I was just like, I need to.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I can always come back, but when the joy is gone, I would be angry and bringing that energy into an audition room. And I'm like, I wouldn't have cast me if I was auditioning at that point in time in my life, you know.
Speaking about auditions, I was curious. So, like, for example, let's say when you were casting, like, the Percy Jackson musical, is it, like, a different kind of perspective of you being, like, the composer lyricist compared to when you were auditioning as an actor? Like, what was that kind of difference in the room like for you?
You know, I have a lot of empathy for actors because I was one. So, like, I'm rooting for actors every time they walk in a room. I'm just, like, as kind as I could possibly be. I try to be as present and giving as I possibly can, because I've been in their shoes. But I think of myself as just like a storyteller, as pretentious as that sounds, whether that's an actor or a music director or an orchestrator or a writer or behind the table as a casting person, it gives me perspective, but I'm all like from that point of view of just like, is this person going to help us tell our story and are they a good fit? And then, you know, it's kind of out of your hands, but it does teach you a lot. I think I love wearing a lot of hats because each one informs another in some capacity.
Cool.
Yeah.
We also, we heard that you were part of the 25th Evita anniversary tour, which is like such a beautiful musical. What was it like for you to be a part of something like that? And how did you like prepare for it?
It was a crazy audition. I had to learn the soldier's dance, which is like in 7/8, the tricky counting timing thing. And I'm not like a dancer. So it was a really rough audition for me. I had to work my ass off. Sorry, excuse my language. I've been trying to keep it clean. I got a phone call on a Friday from my agent saying they want you in California you have rehearsal. I think you're going to have your dressing on Monday. You're going to have, meet your stage manager. You go into the show Friday. So I got a phone call on a Friday saying, go fly out to the National Tour in California. And I had 3 days to learn the show, or my put in was that Friday. So like 4 days to learn the show, which is crazy. I had done it. I had done a regional production of it, so I knew it, but I was covering Magaldi and someone else. So it was a lot of work. I basically learned a lot in a hotel room with a stage manager in like 2 days. It was wild. It was absolutely
That's not crazy. A lot of time.
Oh. No, I have such respect for actors. And that was like, you know, it's a show that is well known. I have such respect for actors that are working on brand new material that are thrown, you know, into the deep end. My friend Lauren Marcus, who happens to be Joe Iconis' wife, the writer, she's also a wonderful writer as well. She's doing a show called Bedwetter off Broadway. And I think it's Casey Levy in the lead in that. She got sick, the lead, and Lauren had to go on like the very first preview and just like jump in, do the show. And I don't think she ever had a full rehearsal. I think she kind of learned the show from watching it. So it's just kind of wild how understudies and swings just kind of get thrown into a piece. So that's what that situation was like. But then I got to do it for 7 months, and it was a blast. Yeah.
So for me, like kind of personally, where I kind of found out about you was from the Lightning Thief musical, which I kind of got recommended to me from someone. So like whilst I was listening to it, because I knew of the books before and like I was a big fan of that, I felt like you really like captured kind of the story and the characters, and I was just wondering how you did that. Like, was it a thing of reading the books or not actually reading?
Oh, everything came from the books, 150,000%. It's a real testament to Joe Trace, the book writer of the show, because he really understood the tone that Rick had. And we worked really closely with Rick Riordan's agents, and they would tell us, you cannot combine characters for these two. You have to do X, Y, Z things. And like, it was such a lucky break that TheaterWorks USA, the company that got the rights, was able to get the rights, because Rick had felt really burned by the films that didn't understand what his books were. And so to have the opportunity to try to like do right by him, we absolutely wanted to. So yeah, everything came from the books. Every idea was coming back to the books. Even though it's only based on the first book series, we read them all and we read all the other stuff just because Annabeth doesn't have her own POV chapter in Lightning Thief, but she does in other books, to just get their voices in our heads. And Joe is really an authority on that. I mean, he loves these books so fiercely. Yeah. So I would take stuff from his script or take stuff from the book and use as lyric material and stuff like that. So very, very close, that adaptation. I've never been done an adaptation quite like this before, because it was so... We wanted to be beholden to the material.
Yeah.
We had to change some things, obviously, for time. But
definitely.
To continue on. when looking at, like, the writing process for Lightning Thief, what do you think? Say if there was, like, one song that was, like, easiest to write, and was there another that took you, like, ages to write?
Yeah, I've spoken about the hardest song in the show for me was Son of Poseidon. It almost killed me, and we had to, like, present it for producers in like 2 days before I knew when it had to be finished. So that was like the pressure of writing that song and figuring out what it had to do was the hardest. I can go into that, but how we solved it, and using all the different, it had to do with like the rest of the show being built. Then I could figure out what to do with that number, because I used all these different musical motifs and themes from different characters and, you know, put them all together so that it worked. And then I need something to anchor a song to. So I structure songs like essays. So what is the thesis statement? What is the crux of the, you know, what is your theme? And I said, I don't know how to fix this problem with Son of Poseidon, because they were like, we have to get somewhere out from the underworld all the way out to the beach. And how does it get, you know, to fight Ares. And I said, I don't know. And Joe said, well, son of Poseidon, that's your hook. And I said, why? And he's, well, his dad gave him, you know, in the book it's pearls, but in this we use the seashell because it's a little more visual and auditory, to help him earlier in the show when he puts it together that he can use this to go save his mom. And then he's able to forgive his dad and then take ownership of like who he is and then use the powers of the ocean and had to defeat Ares because of that. And then at the end, he's rewarded by actually seeing his dad. So it's tracking all of that was really interesting. And it's this moment where I was like, oh, it's this kid who finally sees that his dad is fallible, is human, even though God is makes mistakes. And I was, when I cracked that song was in the, maybe my dad was a screw up too moment, which is this like moment that Percy really sees. It's one of my favorite lyrics in the show, but it's just this idea of like, oh man, he just did the best he could for me. And, I have to let this go. And if I don't, it'll consume me. And we see that happen with Luke. But so that was a really tricky song to crack. But like the song that was the easiest to write was Another Terrible Day, because I literally took the lyric that Joe had on the page. He had heard dialogue on a page and it had rhythm to it. So I just took it. And George Salazar was so funny. The actor that off-Broadway played Mr. D. And we didn't know he was going to play Mr. D. We just asked him to like, would you try something? So I think I wrote Another Terrible Day in an afternoon because I just loved all of that. So those are probably the hardest song and the easiest song. DOA also was very hard. It was really hard. The key changes in that song were really tricky, and figuring all of that out was sequencing wise was really tricky. But I'm really proud how that came out as well. Good Kid was easy. Good Kid was super easy to write.
Yeah, that song is still on my repeat on Spotify constantly.
But I think when you live with these characters for 10 years or whatever, you have their voices in your head. And I had written the one-hour version of the show, and Good Kid or Grand Plan, none of those songs were in the, or Grand Monsters, none of those songs were in the 1 hour. So when we were able to expand it, I knew like immediately, I want to have a moment for Percy and it should feel like this. And Joe Trace didn't even write a scene. He just said, you know what you want to do? Just go write that song. It'll go here in the show after he's kicked out of camp. I'm like, uh-huh, exactly. And then it just fit. It would just, I knew what to do with it. But again, it's not, I'm not trying to like pat myself on the back for saying I can write quickly. More about like, the song came easily because I knew it was a puzzle piece, and that's how these things work sometimes. And I knew exactly what the puzzle, how to fix it.
So I have a question, sort of just out of curiosity for me. I was wondering if like you have plans or you kind of want to bring anything to London, just because I can't get to America. So I'm just wondering if there's a chance.
Like I said, I did a concert.
I know, and I just missed it.
In London, and I did a workshop of Experience Marianas, the cult musical, and in there, and I would very, very, very much love to bring it over there. We did do kind of an immersive night of Monster Songs at the Other Palace. I'd love to do that again.
Well, did you?
That was really fun, because we have some VR elements to that. Yeah, I would love to do something over there. I have a lot of friends over there. I have a very strong affinity for London. It would be really exciting to see what a totally different reinvented version of Lightning Peep would be over there too. That would be really cool. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Hopefully one day.
I'll keep asking my friends and see what they say.
This is kind of similar to other questions, but like whilst writing the like Lightning Thief in particular, were there any like particular artists or songs that inspired you?
Oh yeah, 100%. But like there was a lot, but they were all for each particular character. So Percy is kind of an everyman, right? Or every hero, every person kind of hero. Mm-hmm. So I listened to a lot of like kind of balladeer, singer-songwriter, kind of like classic rock. So Bruce Springsteen, Bon Jovi. Mm-hmm. Also, the use of the glockenspiel is something that Bruce Springsteen uses a lot, and in these kind of songs of getting on the road and getting out of town and like wanting freedom and struggling with everyday situations. But I think the glockenspiel represents hope through adversity. I love that the sound of those little bells. So I used a lot of that in Percy's sound. Also, like I wanted a lot of explosive sounds. So like Paramore. A lot of like 90s grunge, early 2000s rock. I actually have a list. I used like Gustav Holst's The Planets a bit, that classical composer, try to get a sense of like space and Ooh. Epicness. That was more kind of in the earlier versions of the show. But like Annabeth, you know, she's very notey. So I listen to a lot of like piano driven rock, Regina Spektor, or Doremus Benfold's like Haim, those kinds of artists. Just like a lot of like angst. There was a lot of like listening to the Black Parade.
I like that band.
Yeah, there was just a lot of like that kind of energy for Percy's stuff, because I wanted it to really drive and really rock. The kind of angst, that teen angst that you get from those kinds of emo bands too, a little bit, are really helpful to tap into. A lot of octave jumps and things like that I think are really like exciting and volatile. I mean, Weezer and Green Day. And then for like, interesting enough for like Grover, because he's like acoustic guitar. So like, you know, everyone acoustic guitar wise, there was like some like kind of alt rock country bands, Wilco, even Taylor Swift, like whoever, you know, I kind of sop it all up. So it's, but yeah, it's, I think like some of those artists in particular, I know I have this list. I'm going to see if I can. I was gonna look at it for a second, but go ahead. Oh, here we go. Okay. Gustav Holst, Pat Benatar, and Joan Jett. Those are for Put You in Your Place, Paramore, Taylor Swift, The Who, a lot because of the kind of some of the orchestral stuff. Smashing Pumpkins is in, and the Lone Bellows. Those were especially for the song Try, some of the cut songs. The heavy, like I listen to a lot of like Funkadelic and the heavy and like those bands to try to St. Paul and Broken Bones to like try to figure out DOA, like Donna Summer, stuff like that. But yeah, My Chemical Romance, Fleetwood Mac, Elvis Costello, Ben Folds, a lot of Ben Folds. Yeah. AC/DC for Put You in Your Place in those moments, Green Day. And there were a lot of like soundtracks, like 80s soundtracks that had like synthesized sounds. So like the Never Ending Story soundtrack, Goonie soundtrack, Labyrinth soundtrack, Starman soundtrack, there's like John Carpenter soundtracks, those things. You create like spooky things too. Mm-hmm. So I'd listen to like John Carpenter's synthy soundtrack to like Halloween or something. And then Benjamin Britten or like Stravinsky. And then like try to figure out like what can I do with electric guitars to make that exciting? Frank Black and the Catholics, Imagine Dragons, Bob Dylan, Donna Summer, Fountains of Wayne, Weezer, Brandi Carlile, Phoenix. Yeah, those are some of the artists.
Cool. Ooh. That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. But again, like each song, right? It's like if I'm going to try to crack a certain song, like what's the artist that sounds the most like this? I'm going to try to figure out kind of the energy of that I want to try to go to.
Yeah, makes sense.
So we know the story of Percy Jackson is based a lot on Greek mythology. I was wondering if, like, prior to you being introduced to the project, was that something you knew a lot about and you were interested about, or did you learn more about it as you
wrote it? I love Greek mythology. Love Greek mythology. Obviously, my first musical, like I mentioned, the terrible adaptation of the Oresteia by Aeschylus. I had a giant book of Greek mythology growing up, a big colored, it's like gigantic book that my mom had, because my mom is a history teacher for many years. And I always love looking at the monsters, like obsessed with it. So yeah, Clash of the Titans, the original, because I'm old, was one of my favorite movies. So I love that. And you know, but I hadn't read the books because I, you know, I missed them because I'm older, so I missed these books. But Joe Trace, man, it's like you got to read these. And I think I read the whole series like really quickly. I just devoured them. I loved the point of view, how funny the books are, but also how Rick leans into the weirdness, the dysfunction in the Greek myth families. You know, it's like Medusa dated your dad, like those things. That's what I really loved, rather than trying to like make something too serious or too whatever. Like, it's got a real silly point of view to, or a really interesting point of view too, and real heart to those characters. So, but yeah, love Greek mythology.
Yeah, I love it a lot as well. So we wanted to speak just a little bit about how you like got into the theatre industry, because obviously it's massive and it's pretty like it's really hard. So I wondered if you could talk about maybe some challenges that you've had to overcome throughout your time.
Well, I mean, I've been very lucky. I'm a privileged person. You know, I grew up in a pretty like upper middle class area, so I was able to like take dance classes and music classes and those kinds of things. So I was very lucky, and I had parents who were supportive of that. Not all parents are. I take like singing lessons and things like that, and I took piano lessons starting at age 5. And I learned guitar and those kinds of things. So kind of the wanting to be a performer just like happened that way. It was a lot of training. And then, you know, getting into college was a crapshoot. I had no idea what I was doing. I like lucked out because I auditioned for the University of Michigan while I was at Interlochen doing a show, and I didn't realize, you know, maybe it was because I didn't realize how good a school that was. I wasn't as nervous because I probably didn't realize how good a school that was. So that education really helped me. But honestly, like, yeah, it was going to New York and then like just pounding the pavement, doing the early auditions and going to cattle calls of, you know, trying to get seen by people, making friends with folks that are telling you, oh, there's a casting agent that's looking for this and that. So it was just a lot of years of the grind of that. And then every now and then lucking out and getting a bite.
Okay. Was there any moment in like your theater career that stuck with you and you always like think back of?
There was a couple places like on tour. Like in Miss Saigon at the beautiful theater in Toronto that we were in. It was just like a converted opera hall. So like just being backstage and seeing theaters from backstage, that's like really exciting as an actor. I got to do South Pacific at Carnegie Hall with Brian Stokes Mitchell and all these like Kelly O'Hara and all these cool folks. And or it was Reba McEntire. She was in it as well. And being in Carnegie Hall was like just listening to that symphony blew my mind. Hearing Brian Stokes Mitchell sing "This Nearly Was Mine" from like 1 foot away from you with an entire symphony standing there. That I have like whenever I'm like, oh, this industry is the worst. I hate it. I'm like, you did some pretty cool stuff, and there are moments like that. So, you know, yeah. Yeah, it's been very lucky to have some cool gigs.
So I was wondering, from your perspective, what's something in the future you'd hope to see in theatre?
Well, I'm a huge advocate for accessibility in theater. I think right now is a turning point in theater and in at least in the United States. I think culturally of underrepresented folks trying to get their stories out there. The challenges are many in commercial theater to have that happen in an equitable way because of just these kind of systems of oppression of commercial theater, but also just like the way that the business operates of getting people into a theater and the price of real estate for the like five families that own all the theaters, because they own the real estate of those places, so they can drive ticket sales up, and what the overhead is of how much a show needs to make to be in that theater and all those things, those gatekeepers. What I hope is that like we find ways around that, those gatekeepers. I mean, the ugliness of what that system is may always just be what that is, but there's so many more exciting ways of telling stories and getting them out there. And I think it's community-based. I think it's embracing new technologies. I think streaming is so important. I think it's, yeah, it's going to be all of those things. So that's what I'm hoping where theater goes, is in a more collaborative and in accessible ways.
I have a question, like, since you've been doing this for a long time, do you have any tips, like, to give, like, aspiring actors or people in the musical theater, like, aspiring musical theater writers as well?
Just keep at it, and you gotta write something bad to write something good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because a lot of people are just so afraid to write something that they don't write anything. But if you write at least a first draft, you can then write a second draft.
Yeah.
And I think in terms, as a writer, that has helped me a lot when I'm feeling stuck, to just throw stuff out there. And then to find your folks, like find your people, both as a writer or as an actor. I feel like that's the other advice I would give is like, surround yourself with folks that make you better and make you want to, you know, work harder and inspire you, and that will help you when things are tough. It really will. It gives you a sense of community.
To
fall back on. I also say, like, have other interests, because those things will really help you too. But
yeah.
And training. I'm always like sopping in new music. I feel like listening to new music, going to see shows and like working with new writers just makes me a better writer. But like as an actor, going to see as much as you can and taking class and working on your craft and all of those things, like never ends, never stops.
Yeah. Kind of leading a bit off of that question, is there something that you've learned throughout your time in the theater kind of world that you wish that you knew about sooner?
Get everything in writing. Like truly, I know that seems a little maybe cynical, but like get have a contract. If I was to talk to myself back then, I would just be like, get a lawyer, it's going to change your life. Because somebody can then say, hey, that's not right. Or don't sign that. That's not the way things should happen. I wish I had someone looking out for me like that, but I just didn't know at the time.
So for me, I just love the fact that theater can make like people feel a lot of things really deeply and kind of makes them reflect on like their own life choices. So I was just wondering for you, what do you think one of the most important things of theater is?
Empathy, plain and simple. You get to be in a room with other folks and you get to learn a story. You get to walk in someone else's shoes for that story or get to feel a sense of what that other person is going through. And that creates empathy, and we need it so desperately in the world right now. That's why I think theater is the best vehicle for empathy. It is just you're seeing it. It's so primal. You know what I mean? To just see a story acted out in front of you by other people, you immediately go outside of yourself. There is no screen, you know, whatever. It's like, it's a connection like that that I think is so important.
Okay. So we're going to slowly end our conversations. It's getting rather late for all of us. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm exhausted.
Oh, don't worry.
I don't know if anything I've said made any sense over the past hour, because I am so tired.
It was really like fascinating to listen to. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We have a little like little quick, like a little quick game where we read a quote from a book, musical, or both, and you can guess what it's from if you know.
Oh God. Okay.
So Chloe, can you start off?
I'm old, so I probably will know any of these.
Hopefully you'll recognize a couple of the musical ones, but okay, so the first one we have is "You are all of the colors in one at full brightness."
Oh my God. I am no, this isn't six, is it? What is this?
Oh no.
All the colors in one in full brightness? Is that like The Wiz? That's what it's. No idea.
So do you think it's a book or a musical?
Oh, I thought it was a musical. Is it a book?
Yeah, it's actually a book.
Is this one of Rick's stories? Is this one of the Heroes of Olympus?
No, it's actually not. It's from this book called All of the Bright Places, which I think is now a film, but yeah.
Never heard of it, so sorry.
That's okay.
Have to check it out.
Megan, go on.
Okay, the second one is... give your friendships the magic you would give romance, because they're just as important.
Is this one of the Harry Potter books?
No.
That's a good guess there, actually.
It is a good guess. Give your
friends the magic. Is it a book or is it a musical?
It's a book.
Oh, God. Is this like a YA novel that's like a Canadian YA novel? Because I'm not. Is this
it's a British YA novel, so I'm not surprised that you don't know it.
Yeah.
Is it like Matilda, or like what is it?
It's by this author called Alice Oseman, who wrote Heartstopper. I don't know if you know it, but it's been like a big kind of thing on Netflix recently.
No. You should definitely watch it.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Okay.
So
not doing well.
Hopefully you'll get better. The next one is, the things we do today will be tomorrow's news.
Isn't that new from Newsies?
Yeah,
yeah.
Thank God, something I know. All right, what else?
Okay, and this should be an easy one. Measure in life and love.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simple and easy.
Yeah, musical ones are going to be easy.
Okay. Yeah. So this next one is, I bet you could find all the mysteries of the universe in someone's hand.
Well, I want to say Children of Eden, but that's not right. is this a musical or a book?
Yeah, it's a book. It's not a musical.
I'm not going to know. Not going to know. What is it?
It's called Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Okay. For some people, small, beautiful events are all life. Can't talk. I'm going to repeat that. That's more clear. For some people, small, beautiful events are what life is all about.
Is this like The Fault in Our Stars or something? Or like a book like that?
It's like, it's a book and there's also a really popular series.
Oh, I don't know.
That's like been going on for a long time.
It's EastEnders. No, what is it? No, what? It's not, this isn't Harry Potter. I would know that. No, what is it?
It's from Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
No, my dad's a huge Doctor Who. I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I like Doctor Who. I just haven't gotten it. Watched it all. It's a
commitment. I've only watched like maybe like one season and read one book. So
yeah. My cat is screaming at me to wrap it up. So what are the other ones? Sorry.
That's all right. The next one is The Weight of the World's on My Shoulder.
Well, that's a lyric I wrote for I'll Try. But it's alluding to a book, to one of the later Olympians books. Percy Jackson book.
Okay, the next one is another musical one, so hopefully you can get it. Okay. You're never alone, you're never disconnected.
never alone. You never disconnected. West Side Story.
Yep.
And then this last one is, this moment will just be another story someday.
Is this from a book?
Definitely from a book.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's called The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Oh, yes. I've heard of it. Oh, my God. He climbed to the top. My cat climbed to the top of the door. It's hanging off the door frame. Sorry, I need to go.
It's okay. So thank you for coming on our podcast again.
My pleasure. hope any of that was helpful. I know I was a little out of it. So.
Well, it's really fun. Don't worry.
No, it was really good. Thank you.
Yeah. Of course. Well, good luck with everything. Are you in high school or out of college or you graduating?
We're both in university.
Yeah, right. We both just finished our first year, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, good luck with school.
Thank you.
Good luck with the kid.
Oh, the project that you have. Both all of the cats and all of the babies. All of the kids. All right. I'll talk to you later. Take care.
Thank you. Bye bye. You seemed really weird.
Do you want to fin it?
Yeah.
Social plug.
What are our social plugs?
Just be like, follow us.
Oh yeah,
on whatever our social media thing is.
Yeah, don't forget to follow us on all of our social medias, which are Instagram, which is the_Burrow Podcast, our Twitter, which is the_BurrowPod, and you can email us at the.burrow.pod@gmail.com if you have any like suggestions or you want to talk about anything.
We also want to give a massive thank you to the new Patreon who have been supporting us on our podcast journey since we started. They've kind of really helped us grow like a wider audience and promote our podcast. So if you're a creative and are wanting to kind of branch out, then definitely go to them and see what they can do for you.
Yeah, you can check them out on Instagram.
So thank you for tuning into this podcast.
Mm-hmm. And we can't wait till the next episode where we're going to discuss They Both Die at the End by Adam Silvera.